Hello and welcome to the First Issue Club. We are your weekly comic book podcast. We're just like Sue Storm. We love a good read. We are the Lisan Al Ghaib of comic book podcasts. We are your chosen ones that shepherd you into the paradise that is the medium of comic books. Comic books, it's not a genre anymore, my man. It's a way of experiencing. It's a way of life. It's a hobby that gives you a family. Welcome.
What's the thing they say? May my knife shatter or something?
May your knife chip and shatter.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah.
I said the same thing at my first communion. So it just took me minutes to like realize what the phrase was.
Ride you the Shai-Hulud.
Held the wafer up to your forehead.
Yeah. Dune, the movie, part one and two, has become the new cool sci-fi movie to enjoy among the masses.
Yeah. Denis Villeneuve is insanely good.
Yes. The man who did Blade Runner 2049.
Yep.
He Arrival. Did Arrival.
Sicario.
All of them.
Have you guys
Air
seen
Bud.
Dune 2?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Big time.
So good.
So good.
I'm going to have to be the schlub that has to watch one and two on my TV, as the director intended.
Yeah, on your TV, for sure.
On my phone.
It is. I hate going to the movie theater. This was one where I was like, I need to do IMAX.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it was like brain liquefying loud, and I loved it.
It's so good.
I think going forward, I am going to be an IMAX person because I get so... I think I have a little bit of misophonia, and I know that's annoying when people say they have a little bit of like...
Is that a real thing? That sounds like a fun bit.
Oh, misophonia. Misophonia.
That's like something you say like when you're faking it. Like, hey, misophonia.
Misophonia, me love you long time.
Wow.
It's when you're bugged by a lot of auditory stimuli, especially...
That's called ADD, brother.
Oh, I was going to say, back in my day, we called that autistic.
Especially like chewing sounds and things like that.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, yeah.
And that really bugs me in movie theaters, just hearing like the chatter. And the IMAX theater is so loud, you just cannot hear the person next to you scream. It's like just so loud.
So if you're looking for a place to commit a murder, may I suggest Dune 2 IMAX.
In the mouth of the Shai-Hulud.
From your mouth to Shia LaBeouf's ears. Shia LaBeouf.
Oh my God. Somebody edit Shia LaBeouf writing.
I am the Shia LaBeouf. There have been others, but I am the best.
Oh, good shit.
I'm Mike D.
I'm Greg.
And I'm Vargas.
We're collectively the First Issue Club.
I'm Muad'Dib Vargas.
Muad'Dib Vargas. Okay, does Paul need that many names?
Yeah, obviously.
He's Muad'Dib.
Yeah.
He is Usul.
Uh-huh.
He is Lasan Al Ghaib.
Mm-hmm.
And he is also...
Kwisatz Haderach.
Yeah, the Kwisatz Haderach.
That does seem like too many names.
And Paul.
That's a lot of hats.
But that's like...
First of all, the fact that the name Paul...
I know it is weird for a sci-fi movie to just have a Paul.
Exists in that world. That's the most out of place name in that universe.
False. Duncan Idaho.
Yeah, Duncan Idaho is a stretch of a name.
Wow,
that one sticks out like a sore thumb. I would prefer Pauls in my sci-fi movies over like, you know, like what are the hobbits' names?
Frodo,
Merry, Pippin.
Duncan
Idaho.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Duncan Idaho sounds like a porn
I'm
name.
I'm thinking, I mean,
just can't ignore it.
It's not the hobbits then.
The dwarves.
It's the dwarves who came along with them on the journey
Sleepy,
in the Hobbit.
Doc.
Yeah. Because all their names are like, they all sound so similar.
Yeah. And there's like 14 of them.
Yeah, and there's like 14 of them. And I was like, can't they just be like Dave and Warren and like Luke?
Yeah. Luke. No, not in Tolkien's world.
Yeah. They were all like beansy, weensy, teensy. Okay. Well, we've gotten that out of our system, I guess, whatever that was.
Sorry, everyone.
But
I could talk about Dune for a lot longer if you wanted.
Same. But I also think I don't want to be a Dune
douche
spoiler cast.
Dune
either.
Cast. Here we go.
Maybe we'll do a Patreon and vent about how much we love Dune.
We can Dune it up.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll have to watch it then.
It's really good. You should.
It is a book that's been out for so long now, too, that I also kind of feel like it's a little unspoilable, but there is... Gen Zers are loving Dune now, too, right?
And it's their Harry Potter.
They haven't read the books, for sure.
Oh, you should. Books. It's all about how you shouldn't follow a charismatic leader.
How poignant for times like these.
Yeah, fucking tell me about it.
Oh, Dune's so good. Okay, we're going to talk about comic books. What we do on this podcast is cover first issues, give you some good ideas of onboarding points into exploring comics as a medium. But before we get to that, we'll talk about some comic book news, some of the first issues that are out this week, some of which we're covering. Dawn Runner, number one. Man's Best, number one. Jango Fett, a new Star Wars book, came out this week. Mm-hmm. Web of Spider-Man, number one, which was kind of an onboarding point to a lot of the new things that are going to happen with Spider-Man in 2024. That was kind of like a book that gave a lot of teasers. And then X-Men Forever is a kind of mini-series that was like a tie the bow on a couple loose threads from Kieran Gillen's X-Men.
You forgot DC's Ape Real Special.
I left out the Ape Real Special.
You shouldn't, because I read it, and we're going to talk about
right.
it.
Hell yeah.
You may be wondering, how many primate puns can one book fit? I'll have the answer for you later in the episode, folks.
I think if Marvel Apes has anything to say about it, it's a lot.
All right, let's talk about some comic industry news first, though. Okay, and then I think one of the more interesting topics, Greg, you mentioned earlier about...
Valiant?
Yeah, about Valiant.
Yeah, so over the weekend, the previous week, Valiant posted a job listing for a generative AI video position.
Uh-huh.
The details of that I can't give you because it has now been deleted after some Twitter sleuths found out and posted on the social media site that Valiant was openly hiring AI, techs. I don't want to call them artists, but they're basically, you know.
Prompt writers.
Yeah, prompt writers. There was some general concern and outcry from the comic book community about publishers, you know, being so flagrant about hiring AI positions. We talked about it in our last episode about how DC is now investigating Sorrentino for possibly using AI imagery for some covers for the DC book that he's doing with Chip Zdarsky about Joker Year One.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the time is now. The conversation is here, and it is now up to us to decide, not to decide, but to voice our disagreeance with AI entering comic books in general, not just Marvel and DC, but Image, Ahoy, whatever. Like, AI anything doesn't have a real purpose in comic books.
I agree. And I think one of the things that was like great about the writer's strike and the Actors Guild strike was they have a union where we could say, let's put our foot down about the limits of how much AI is going to be used in screenwriting or with, you know, the depiction of you as a character in something being used without, like, your likeness being used without you. Like, all these things are very scary and can maybe be done easily with AI, but take a lot of the art out of things.
Yeah.
Comic books don't have a lot of unions, right? And so that's an industry where I think, like, the fans need to show a little bit of muscle when things like this happen,
right,
to help, like, enforce the stuff we care about and believe in. Vargas, on the video, you keep...
Popping in and out.
Yeah.
We have dynamic lighting going on for the YouTube folks. And
I don't know if,
man,
I, can,
it
I, don't
is
know if I can change it.
Touchy.
Now.
I think, in addition to fans, big name creators need to also kind of put their foot down about it. Like, if DC's like, hey, James Tynion, do you want to come back and write Batman? He should be like, yeah, if you promise you're not going to be using AI.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that should just be part of the deal.
Well, and wasn't it Walt Simonson who wrote in his the back of a Thor book about AI of just like, we've been tricked. Mm-hmm. We got the idea of AI wrong. AI is supposed to alleviate us of these duties like writing code or, you know, writing things or doing things in the background that computers can easily do so that we are free to be creative. So
exactly.
That we can make poems and make stories and draw paintings. Why are we giving those fun and interesting and creative things to computers to do it in ones and zeros?
Yeah.
We fucked it up. We got it backwards. And I thought that was so poignant of him just to be like, if we want to use AI... I mean, it's almost unavoidable at this point, but let's use it the way it's intended to like do background maintenance on stuff and to like repair software or something. Like, it shouldn't be drawing pictures. It shouldn't be writing scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make a computer do my job where I stare at Excel spreadsheets for 8 hours a day. Like, that's
honestly
what it should be doing.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think on top of all of that with the Valiant thing, it's a really dumb move for them. In another facet, too, because I'm telling you right now, as someone who works in the tech sector, and Mike D can probably back me up on this.
Tech sector. Great comic book name.
Yeah. Tech sector is a guy, though. Anyway, hiring.
That was way funnier than it should have been. Sorry.
Hiring somebody whose job it is to create AI prompts is like hiring someone now who is a farrier, someone who shoes horses. It's a job that's going to be obsolete in 5 fucking years.
It's also a job that someone that you already employ can do.
That's, yeah.
It's like if I hired someone to tie my shoes for me.
That's what I mean.
Like, it's like you're wasting money at that point.
Yeah. It's going to be a completely obsolete position as someone who writes prompts for AI.
Because once they teach ChatGPT to do it, I mean, like...
Well, no, because AI is going to just progress to a point where it can take in my common language and output something just as good as these, like, professional prompt writers can. Like, that's the direction it's going.
Yeah.
It's just a bad business move to make that a position. And if you're looking for those positions, it's a bad move to take that position because your job's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Especially I think in an industry that's so dependent on craft and artistry.
Yeah.
It's just like bad move. Like so many of the creators and people who matter are holistically against what artificial intelligence, art, and media represents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a publisher, just like, I don't
back
know.
Away
even
slowly.
If you're just trying to use it for like marketing material, just don't.
Yeah.
Because we can tell.
Just don't.
We talked about it on our Discord. People are using it for eBay listings to write their descriptions. And you can tell. You can tell through the eBay listings that it's just some homogenized, repetitive bullshit that is way too wordy.
Yeah.
And like you can tell a computer wrote it.
Yeah.
As strange as that sounds.
Well, and it's okay, here's part of the problem too, is that people think, hey, I need a lengthy description for my item, and that's going to sell it better.
Yeah.
Right?
SEO.
Yeah, right.
For my Goof Troop lunchbox.
I'm going to SEO optimize this thing. But instead, it's just a wall of fluffy writing that doesn't answer any questions about the item being sold, right? It's just like, you have to have this. It's a must for any collector up available is, you know, item name. Like,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah,
fan
blah,
of
blah,
blank.
Blah. Like, on and on. This nostalgic item, yada, yada. Our search engines are going to get better over time. They're going to find ways to weed the shit out to find things that are a user's preference, that a description tells them what they want. And
you know what's going to help that, which is great? AI. AI is going to help detect what AI is to weed it out.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be for.
Yep. Yeah. Your description on the lunchbox should be 1967.
Yeah, Goof Troop lunchbox.
Goof Troop lunchbox, mint condition.
You know what AI can also do?
Like $5 shipping.
It can replace the jobs of people who have to be in charge of safe searching images and videos on the internet.
Oh my God, dude.
There are actual people, like you and I, who have to see every picture and every video that's ever posted on the internet to make sure it can't be searched or found.
So
those people get free therapy. You know why? Because it's fucked. It's a fucked job to have.
True story. I used to work at the USDA in cybersecurity, and anytime we got a report of porn, people looking at porn, which was like 80% of what we did, just catching people looking at porn. If we found stuff that we thought was questionable in terms of legality, we had to send it to a guy whose job it was to
look at
click
it.
That link and look.
Yuck.
Mm.
Because somebody has to verify.
You know whose job that is? A robot.
It should be. That's exactly right. It should be. We should run it through some AI model and sure.
To bring it all home, First Issue Club stance, AI does not belong in comic books.
Yeah.
We hope that you agree with us. We hope that the publishers in the community agree with us.
It's going to keep coming up. We'll try to talk that we'll make the conversation shorter and shorter over time, probably, because you'll have heard us vent on it so much.
Mm-hmm.
That being said,
we're fire hot right now.
I think it still needs to be said by comic book podcasts and comic book fans and discussed every time it comes up, just to keep putting pressure on the people who are thinking they're above everybody else and they're going to get away with using it.
Yeah. Also, the apps that you download to like make yourself look funny in different eras and stuff, and like what would I look like as like a dog or a baby? That's AI, and you're teaching it to be better. Yeah. So don't download those apps to make yourself look funny or whatever. Like, because you're helping AI learn how to be a better drawer.
AI.
So just try to stay away from those. Anyway. End rant.
Okay, the X-Men cartoon has been a big topic of conversation.
X-Men 97.
It's 97. Awesome.
97. Vargas has seen some.
Yeah. I watched the first episode. So the first two episodes are out right now.
First two are out, yeah.
I watched episode one, and it's great. I'm assuming both of you have not partake?
I have not partaken. Okay. I saw it, but I didn't inhale.
There's a lot of fun stuff. It's very nostalgic, but they updated everything very nicely. Like the art is a lot less Liefeldian,
okay,
a lot smoother.
I got worried because it's like cel shaded, so I was like, "Oh, wait a minute."
It is. You can tell it's like computer generated, but it still has a lot of that like 90s look to it.
I always assume most cartoons are computer.
Oh yeah,
animated in some way nowadays.
For sure.
Yeah. So that doesn't bug me. But I didn't want to look like cheap and like bare.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
It looks really good. They updated the characters a lot. Like, one of the things that really stuck out to me was Cyclops did this thing where he aimed his like eye beam at the ground and used it to like scoot across a room.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's really neat. Like, that's something I haven't seen in a comic or a show before, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely not like a rehash of like the stuff that they did.
You know what people, I think, kind of forget? Cyclops' lasers aren't like a typical like slicing laser.
Correct. It's a force.
It's a concussive blast.
Yeah.
So when he does that, people are like, "Well, he can't do that." He can.
Yeah.
It's not slice and dice. It's punch and move.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is. I just want to make sure everyone knows that about Cyclops. Yeah. I still hate that bastard, but
I love the idea of a room with a bunch of whiteboards in it and they're like, what are five new things Gambit can do?
Wear a crop top.
Charge up Wolverine's claws, which he does in the first episode.
Okay, fun.
Hot claws is back, folks.
Hot claws, baby.
So Gambit, I know that he can transfer energy into items, and it like becomes explosive. Right?
If memory serves, he turns kinetic energy into potential energy. Right,
so kind of like a basketball coach to a youth league of kids.
Yeah,
a lot of kinetic energy into possibly something.
No,
crazy.
I had it backwards. He turns potential energy into kinetic energy. So like
that's better.
The energy of an object at rest, he turns into the energy of motion.
Which is why when he throws cards,
they hit and explode
because of the built-up energy of kinetic
energy. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. If memory serves, I could be wrong.
It's not like a thing like Rogue can't stop her abilities. She touches you and she absorbs your ability.
Correct.
He can still touch things and not turn them into bombs.
Yeah,
right?
He can play cards without.
That's what I need to know.
Blowing up everyone at the table.
So like he can play basketball and football without like leveling a stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Because I had the honest concern of just like, you know, what is he like King Midas? Can he not
stuff? No. He does not have King Midas syndrome.
Okay.
Where everybody that touches him explodes.
He can't hug. The man can't hug.
Yeah. Rogue does have that problem.
She does.
Can Midas wear gloves?
No, they turn to gold.
Yeah, the gloves would turn to gold.
And weigh him down. Correct. But then he's fine, right?
I mean, yeah. You can't
hold anything.
Yeah. You can't move the gloves.
That's ultimately how he died. He touched himself and he turned to gold.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. He had to pee.
He had a itch on his nose.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so my question on the X-Men 97 thing, given...
It's 1997.
X-Men 1997. 34 reviews on reviewer reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, 100%. Viewer audience score, 94%, as of the time I checked this right before we started recording.
Sure.
Which is great. As of right now, it's the highest rated Marvel thing to like ever be released. It's highest ratings for like next day after release or whatever it is.
Okay, sure.
Do you care? Like, is X-Men 97 something you care about? I mean, Vargas said it was cool, but it's like it is ultimately a cartoon that's built to be like the cartoon from when we were kids.
It's filled with member berries.
That's exactly right. It is rated that high because people are like, oh, the theme song's back.
Yeah, it does a good job.
People are fully torqued on.
It does a good job at doing the thing it's trying to do, but is that something you want?
It is separated from the nostalgia.
Uh-huh.
It is fun. It is a fun show.
Okay.
I don't know if you showed it to a Gen Zer who never had the experience.
Yeah.
If they'd be like,
if they'd care.
If they would even care that this was a show.
Part of me is like, I'm not very excited about this because it's a cartoon. And maybe I should make myself watch it.
You should.
Okay. Especially as an X-head.
I think the interesting thing about X-Men 97 is the showrunner, 2 days before the show premiered, was fired.
Got canned. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Without explanation. So either there was a dispute about how the show should be handled going forward, and Marvel DC didn't have the same vision as the showrunner, or something about the showrunner hasn't come out. And they were like, you gotta go.
Yeah.
I also don't understand a lot of like Hollywood job roles. And like once the show is coming out already, do you need the showrunner anymore?
Yeah. Because the showrunner is going to be the guy. So typically a showrunner will have the Bible of the show, right?
Okay.
You have a five season plan.
Okay.
Before you even walk into the room, right?
Yeah.
And the showrunner's job is to make sure that they more or less adhere to that, to the show Bible, right? So a writer is going to write individual episodes.
Yeah.
The showrunner makes sure that those individual episodes fit into season one, and season one fits into season one through five.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. However.
So he's like the Paul.
Yeah.
He's the Paul of this dune. If this is just going to be a two-season thing, after the show's been done.
It's a bad look. It's a bad look. It shows that they don't have confidence in the show, to me. Or they don't have confidence in this guy.
Or maybe it was only ever intended to be two seasons. Right?
So I think...
That's what I'm not getting.
But then...
The show is airing. The show has been completed.
Yes. Season one has.
Yeah.
Season one has. So they are going to do a season two that hasn't been done yet.
I imagine if you're Disney and Marvel, if this show just brings in a ton of ratings and a ton of money, this goes on for as long as they can handle it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you get X-Men 97, 98, 99, you know, whatever. I don't even know if season two is named X-Men 97.
I have not heard anything about a season two.
X-Men
I don't know.
98?
Yeah.
That's what I'm, you know, but I think the question is... The question is, I've never heard of a show that has only been two or three seasons fire their showrunner before the show debuts.
I can't name you a showrunner that I've ever like known about. It's just like not a thing I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Especially as someone in the Midwest.
Because it's not normally a title. Like Joss Whedon was the showrunner of Buffy.
Okay, yeah.
But he was like a director and a writer and Eric Kripke.
We know him because he directed a lot of the
and wrote
a lot of the episodes
and was a shitbag.
Yeah, Eric Kripke was the showrunner of Supernatural up until season five, and he wrote and directed a lot of the stuff.
Okay.
Right? So like, it's not a title in that like
it's
you
a
wouldn't
passion.
You wouldn't put it on your business card because you'd put like writer director.
Okay. A lot of times the showrunner is the writer-director is what you're saying.
Cat wrangler.
That'll be its own job.
Yes.
So that was the part of the show where we litigate Hollywood job roles.
Yeah.
Anything else about X-Men 97?
For the
we
three
feel pretty
of
good
you,
about it.
There is some dispute about wokeness about X-Men that we won't get into because people...
This is always a conversation with X-Men.
People do not get it.
It's like, leave the politics out of X-Men. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, which is funny. If you don't know, it's funny because the whole point of X-Men is to...
Yeah, we're goofing. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right.
We're new boot goofing.
Seth Rogen and Point Grey Pictures will be producing a movie for 8 Billion Genies.
Oh!
This movie is popping up again in like...
It's going to Amazon Prime.
Sorry, this book is... This comic book is popping up again in like value lists and things that are heating up. Because a long time ago, this was optioned by Amazon to have the rights to produce it.
As a show,
is that right?
Yeah.
And so now they've finally got an actual production company to kind of like
hell yeah
sign on to it. So it's becoming more of a real thing now.
Given the right budget, this will be a smash hit.
This will be a home run.
Really fun. If anyone's listening that missed 8 Billion Genies, comic book where everyone on Earth gets a genie and they get one wish and then stuff gets out of control, right?
Yeah.
The comic has there's eight issues of it, and the first one is the first 8 minutes, the next one is the first 8 hours.
Yeah.
And 8 hours, 8 days.
8 days, 8 months, eight years. And then is it like
eight decades.
8 decades. Yeah. And then maybe even 8 centuries.
Yeah.
It is one of the most unique and well executed ideas in a long time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, really cool think piece of like what would happen in a scenario like that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the like genie bureaucracy and like deciding what to do with contradicting wishes is interesting. And the same thing with like people creating really clever wishes to I don't want to
skirt some rules.
Yeah, to like skirt some rules of the world is really fun. So it would be a great.
I think there is a fun thing. It happens in the first book, so it's not a spoiler. Yeah. But like when you make like a dumb wish that like then another person makes a dumb wish that offset, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And the genies just go, sorry.
Like, yeah, bye.
You wasted it. And I think that is very clever of just like, it makes a point of just like, you got to think about what you're saying and you got to like really be earnest and thoughtful in your intent of what you want.
Yep.
And like, because, you know, if everyone gets one, a lot of people are going to be wishing for the same thing. And I won't spoil it, but it's very great.
I will say I do kind of wish it was a show, because it would just give you more time to play in that really fun world and try different things episode to episode. It's just the story lends itself well to being episodic.
Yeah.
However, I understand that given the nature of it, it's going to have to be really CGI heavy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it just makes more sense probably as a movie just because of that.
Yeah, budget-wise.
Budget-wise, yeah. Mm-hmm. You just like can't make 8 episodes of this because it would just be bonkers.
Unless they did like a Game of Thrones style budget, one season.
Yeah.
8 episodes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That are like 2-hour-long 8 episodes that really like follow the 8 days, 8 hours, like all that stuff. That would be really cool.
Someday, maybe. We'll see.
That's my wish.
Amazon, if anyone can take a chance on it, it's Amazon. I mean, they're the ones that did like, went all in on like the Lord of the Rings stuff, which not a lot of people.
And The Boys.
Not near as many people watched as
Invincible.
They wanted it to, as they wanted to. But all of these things, The Boys, Invincible. Yeah, Paper Girls was one that, but they didn't put all their eggs in a Paper Girls basket.
They didn't. They should have.
The CGI on that wasn't like near as good as some of the other Amazon shows.
Thanks, Wheel of Time.
And it did not get the advertising it should have.
No. Uh-uh.
Such a bummer.
Yeah.
And they really pitched it as like knockoff Stranger Things, I think, thinking that,
look at that residual audience.
Yeah, exactly right. And people were like, I don't want another Stranger Things.
Yeah.
I've already got the first one and I'm kind of, I think people are getting to the point where they're like burnt out on Stranger Things.
Yes.
And then it's like,
that's why it's coming to an end.
They just marketed it wrong.
We got Jason Mantzoukas.
Did they? For season 5?
Paper Girls.
Oh, dude. Paper Girls did. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
He was perfect for that role. Okay, Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra.
I'm stoked about
it. I knew
this is a video game. Yes.
A video game. The trailer just got announced. This is kind of based on, or it sounds like it's based on, the Flags of Our Fathers stuff.
Yeah.
We've got Captain America and Black Panther teaming up in Paris in 1943.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying to presumably find the Red Skull.
Yeah. Right?
They talk about a third super soldier.
Mm-hmm. This is a dating simulator, right?
Yeah. The objective is to make them kiss.
I would play about 100 hours of that. The graphics look insane. It's getting out of control.
It looks so good. It looks so good. And I'm jazzed about the story. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Right on.
Move over, Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2. My new boyfriend's beer.
That's right.
I like the idea of, if you're going to do a comic book video game, put it in a very particular time and place.
Yes.
Surrounded by a very specific narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For way too long, comic book or superhero video games are like, throw a bunch of characters into a thing and then like mindlessly beat up bad guys.
Hashtag
like,
Avengers.
Dude, for real.
And like those things just like don't grab people. They feel very like redundant, where you're just doing the same shit over and over again towards like what end goal. Like people who are fans of these things want a story and a niche experience that they can work through. And I think
these companies
are starting to get the idea that they can do more with this than just use the IP and plug it into something like dumb.
Yeah. I heard the Guardians of the Galaxy game was good though.
That was fun.
So, yeah. I mean, there is a way to do it, but in a unique way. The Avengers game was just a mess from the start.
Well, that is exactly what Mike was talking about, where it's like you just go in and punch the same guy 400,000 times.
Yeah. With just different characters. And that's not fun for anyone. Like, oh, no, you get to unlock you know, this character's
that you get to punch
special
this
costume from this issue. It's like, yeah. I don't fucking care.
That's been the big dig on the Suicide Squad game, too.
Yeah.
Is that out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
People were so stoked on that game because the trailer looked like it was going to tell you a story. Yeah. And then it's like, no, every level of it is just generic run and gun.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah. But Captain America kissing Black Panther in Paris.
DLC, baby.
DLC.
DLC. All right. Let's get to comic books.
Let's get to them.
Let's get to them, though. Who wants to go first?
I will go first. I read Dawn Runner by Rom V and Evan Cagle. Colors by Dave Stewart. Letters by Aditya Bidikar. Holy shit. This book was so good. It was fucking beautiful to look at. First of all, Evan Cagle just crushed it. And then Rom V writes this amazing story about alien race appears on Earth, and it's just like decimating us as a culture. So we have to like trap it in a part of the world with like this huge tall fence that we build, and then we have to create mechs to go kill invading aliens.
Dude, you sold me. You had me at mechs.
But there's a twist at the end. They get this countries and civilizations have kind of like crumbled away their borders and all that. So like now there's like five conglomerates that own the world, and they're split into nations, and like they are competing and like trying to build these mechs to like demonstrate who is the superior one to like defend the world and take care of this alien threat. Well, this new corporation that we're following creates a new mech called the Dawn Runner. There's a lot of biotech stuff, a lot of like imagery that reminded me of Minority Report, The Matrix, Ghost in the Shell. It's like, it's very much of just like, you are not using like gears and pulleys to move it. It's a combination of pilot and mech into one, like Evangelion or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when this new tech gets introduced, there is like a glitch. And so now the main character we were following can now communicate with another character from like 100 years before the aliens like arrive. And so like we're left on this cliffhanger of just like, these people think they're going crazy because they're hearing other voices, but really they're talking to one another from different time periods. It's like the Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock movie about the lake house.
But with mech warriors.
But with mech warriors. So sign me up.
Sounds great.
10 out of 10 recommend. It's a goddamn banger.
Going to be a 5-issue series.
Yep.
Sounds like a comic that you maybe need to be a sci-fi junkie because there's a lot of details. As you were describing it, I was like, I'm kind of lost.
Details, details.
It sounds like there's a lot of like moving pieces.
What you're maybe hung up on is there's a lot of rich tapestry to...
Maybe there's so much world building that just... Yeah, yeah.
Because you have the political dynamic, you have the social... economical dynamic, you have time travel, you have a discussion about
time travel. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah, you have a discussion about biotech and what that does to people. It's like there's this whole thing, and then at the forefront it's monsters fighting robots.
Yeah.
So it has something for everyone. I truly believe that.
All right, right on.
Out on Dark Horse.
Pushed all my buttons.
Heyo.
Engage.
Engage.
And then the last one I read, I'll just do mine real quick. I read yes. DC's Ape Real Special. This is a anthology book dedicated all to DC's famous ape and primate characters. We have Plan of the Apes by John Layman and Carl Mosterit. We have Detective Chimp in Detour by Joshua Hale, Fia Coy, and Phil Hester. And then we have Monkey Prince in Call to Arms by Jin Lun Yang and Bernard Chang. This is every niche chimp ape character from DC history is getting their spotlight in this book.
I am shocked that none of them are apparently Grodd focused.
Well, it does say that because I guess Grodd in the new Flash series is in jail?
Yeah.
So that's what it's about. It's about replacing Grodd. There's a big power struggle now for who is going to be the new Grodd.
I see.
I'm moving my hands a lot. That means it's important.
I can't believe there's enough monkey DC characters.
Brother, there is more than you think.
It's wild how many there are.
There was like 18 different fucking ape monkey
what
things.
What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. I did not know that there were. Okay, so the only one I knew of was Detective Chimp.
I like Detective Chimp. That's enough for me.
And Gorilla Grodd. I knew of them.
Yeah.
Apparently there's another detective who's like an ape.
Okay.
Or gorilla. There is like a monkey with an exposed brain. That's a bad guy. There's like there's like Mahala the something. He's like a French gorilla who has like a Chewbacca like belt across his chest filled with bullets.
Are these guys all just like from Gorilla City? Like they're just like Grodd's buddies.
There is a section in the back of the book that showcases where these monkeys first appeared. Uh-huh. And it's a lot of like strange sports tales, a lot of like early DC digest stuff of like what would happen if
the monkey with the exposed brain is in the Doom Patrol TV series.
Yeah.
Which I think is a human's brain was put into a gorilla's body.
Yep, you got it. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun because it doesn't take itself seriously, but still is like, you know, come on, guys. We're trying to tell a fun story here about like the monkeys and stuff.
Yeah.
A couple of monkey puns here. The monkeys consults a book called the Monkeynomicon.
Perfect.
Which is basically the Necronomicon with the monkey's
with a
face
monkey
on.
Face. Right. Yep.
The bad monkeys form a group called the Legion of
Excellent. 10 out of 10.
By the way, I did not write that, so don't give me a scorned look, Mike D. And then there's also, they form an impromptu JLA,
Jungle
League of America.
League of America.
Which I feel like it should be Justice League Apes.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the only swing I could see. But like everyone's here, Gleek and Beepo the Super Monkey. We have the Monkey Prince. We have Detective Chimp. And then we have this one gorilla. I forget his name, but like he's like another, you know, crime-fighting primate.
Sure. So, Mike D, are you excited for your Scratch and Sniff banana cover now?
I can't wait.
Oh, and there's one joke here that was like too easy, but like one monkey gets in trouble. He's sent back to Gorilla Island with a sign on his chest that says, "Traitor to apes, spank this monkey."
Sure. Easy.
Fun. Aren't we having fun?
Not sold.
Why?
Do I want to get into this?
Mike doesn't like fun. Comics are serious.
Yes and no. Yes and no. I have a thing, I think, where monkeys are used as such a punchline and thing all the time.
Sure.
That I don't know. I'm just over just like, it's silly there's a monkey.
Uh-huh.
And then for them to do all the silly monkeys in one place, I'm like, okay, I don't need this in my life.
So your problem is
I'm just eye-rolling the entire thing.
Okay.
The people involved love them.
Okay.
DC, clean up your monkey population.
Keep your monkeys in check.
No more monkey business.
This many monkey characters.
They're out of the barrel. Let's collect them all up. Okay.
Pick a couple and stick to them.
Okay, let me reiterate. This is a one-off annual. They're not doing a big old monkey event. DC Goes Bananas.
You do one
DC Goes Bananas.
April comic. Now it's going to be every April
for the rest of our lives.
Next is a variant series.
One, I think you're overestimating the buy-in to apes and people's, you know, attraction to
gonna
fun
be a whole
stories.
Ape event.
Next summer, it's going to be deep sea, and the D stands for deep jungle.
Domesticated monkeys.
Planet of the
I think it's
apes.
Fine for a one-off thing.
Yeah.
If this was a six-issue series, I would say, where's the legs here?
Yeah.
Like, what story needs to be told with all these monkeys?
Marvel did do Marvel Apes.
Yep. That was only a five-issue series, though.
It was a five-issue series where they turned all the characters into different ape species.
Uh-huh.
These are just, like, to me, it's confounding that we'd have this many original ape characters that already exist enough to fill an entire annual style book with like all of them.
Well, it's been that they're on the forefront of, you know, ape representation in comic books.
It's true. So, DC are the leaders in ape representation.
I think it's just a fun book. April is April Fools. Uh-huh. You know, I think it's just a funny idea.
You know what's always struck me as weird?
Apes doing stuff, apparently.
The whole thing with, like, this comic is dated, an April comic, but it comes out in...
Mid-March.
In March. And that's always the case. The publication date is always, like, a month earlier than... Or sometimes even 2 months earlier than, like, the formal... release month.
I guess they want to make sure you don't miss it. I guess.
You're supposed to read it for the entire month of April.
To me, this seems maybe like an antiquated thing with like shipping and that maybe used to take a longer time and things on shelves longer, but it doesn't make sense anymore.
I know this. They were originally dated that way because you were supposed to pull it off the shelves that date. You get it and you put it on the shelf and it's dated April. So you pull it off the shelf.
In April. So, okay, that's a signifier of when to stop.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Now, not the case.
No, it isn't.
Correct. It's not.
But we just, like, kept this antiquated system in comic books for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, Also, you can't make the ape pun for, like, a March book.
Yeah.
Or a May book.
Yeah.
True.
It's got to be ape rule.
Yeah. They should have just, like, surprise dropped it.
Monkey March. Surprise drop.
Yeah.
You guys hear about this ape book DC's putting out?
April 1st, whatever the first week of April is. You just drop.
It's got an art germ cover.
Why didn't they release it the first week of April? It's just nonsense.
I don't know.
I'm mad.
You are. You're getting like smoked up about
Mike
this
D
ape
is
book.
Going to write a letter about the monkeys.
Right.
Dear Jim Lee.
Yeah. What's going on?
Get it together.
All right, that's all I read. That was way more ape discussion than you probably wanted, but thanks for going on that journey with me.
Vargas?
Oh, I'm up next.
I don't have anything.
Oh.
I didn't. I never learned to read.
Mike can't read.
I read a couple of things. We'll start with the coolest one, I guess.
I love that cover.
I read Man's Best.
Yep.
Out on Boom, and I told Mike D that my spec radar was going off on this book, so I bought two covers. I got the regular cover, which is great. It's very Peach Momoko reminiscent. Sorry, this is written by Porznak Thai last name. I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. It's the guy who did Infidel. I'm super sorry that I don't know how to pronounce your name. And then it's illustrated and colored by Jesse Longren. I have not read Infidel. I know
that Jesse Lonergan.
Infidel was very good.
I've heard it's very good.
It was very, very cool.
It's a book that's been on my radar to read
because
it's a horror book, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I missed it. But, okay.
Among other things.
Among other things, sure.
Oh, wow. This book's cool.
Yeah, it's great. So it's about three emotional support animals on a space station that... their scientist owner has kind of trained to use these like different mech suits, just to like get them exercise and keep them entertained and whatever. And the space station that they're on is transporting a, terraformer,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, like you land it on a planet and it turns the planet into a thing, whatever. But one day they crash on this planet and the terraformer's missing and their scientist owner's missing and the animals have to go out and find their owner and find the terraformer and defeat the robots that are on the planet. That's kind of the quick elevator pitch. It reads a lot like We Three. Did you ever read Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's We Three?
No.
It's another book about three animals, but I guess it doesn't really land if you haven't read it.
seems like...
what now? Where to pivot?
What do I say? It's about three animals.
It's like Homeward Bound in space.
It's Homeward Bound in space. That's exactly right. Thank you.
Damn, I'm good at this.
Thank you.
I should be writing blurbs.
You know what's been hard to read?
IDW.
Tom King is doing a book called Animal Pound. That is like modern day Animal Farm.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Read that book with a tissue.
Yeah. It's weepy. It's just tough month to month. So I need like a really happy, fun pet book.
This is the opposite. This is like the cure for that.
Yeah, totally.
Read those in tandem then, because you're going to need to pick me up.
Yeah, because it's very much, you know, the cat is the leader and she kind of like doubts herself, but then, you know, something goes right and she feels good about herself. The golden retriever is classic golden retriever, like the cheerleader for everybody. And then there's like a curmudgeon-y French bulldog.
Okay.
You know? Can they talk?
They talk to each other. I didn't get the idea that they were understood by the humans, but they talk to each other and can communicate. Okay. So it's very fun. It's very cute. It is very sci-fi.
Yeah.
But you don't have to like dig into the politics of this world or anything to really get it. Like somebody else's choice of the week.
Sorry, I like my Homeward Bound with a little complication to it.
And if I could recommend a cover, the J. Lee FOC cover is pretty cool.
Oh, that is cool.
I really like the way J. Lee does animals, and this one is pretty neat.
Yeah, almost like they're, I don't know, haunted? Or cursed?
I mean, I think he does a really good job with animals. Especially in this kind of movie. But it's a really fun book. And again, I think my spec radar went off when I saw this book. So, but it also went off when they did, what was the Jeff Lemire book about the dog in space?
Oh my God. What was that book?
You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I can't remember it. So
neither can I.
Berserker Unbound.
Yeah, that was it. It was Berserker. Anyway, so that's Man's Best. It's out on Boom. It's a fun time. I also read Ghost Rider Final Vengeance, number one. It's the first of a mini about the new Ghost Rider. They're introducing the Hood as the new host of Zan
or whatever.
This is actually kind of an interesting number one because Johnny Blaze loses the Spirit of Vengeance, like page two, and the rest of the book is that Spirit of Vengeance, like hopping body to body, like being attracted to people, like pursuing their vengeance.
It's in its whore era,
kind of.
to try on new suitors.
Yeah, so you get to see like two or three little like vignettes of the Ghost Rider, like it jumps into danger at one point.
Oh, wow.
And, like, infects people with, like, a mind virus that's, like, in binary. It jumps into a brood at one point.
I didn't know Danger was still around.
Has an animal ever been a ghostwriter?
Yes, actually. They talked about that in, I want to say, Avengers BC. Where, like, before people, there were still ghostwriters, but it was just, like, a T-Rex.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Right. Pen and stare from a T-Rex.
Yeah.
with his tiny eyes.
Nailed it.
He's got a side eye.
Tiny little arms.
You can't get both pupils at the same time with a T-Rex.
You get half a pen and stare.
Yeah.
So if you're a ghostwriter person, I'm sure you already picked this up, but it was a kind of a cool issue if you're like into the Marvel horror stuff.
Yeah. I covered this book last week.
Oh, you did? Yes. All right, I'll skip it then. I read Black Widow and Hawkeye. It was a fun one.
Yeah, I liked it too.
I read Star Wars Visions by Takashi Okazaki. It's another revisit of the Ronin and the Droid from the Star Wars Vision Season 1.
Mm-hmm. Wait, explain.
Star Wars Visions, it was a TV series that came out. They're on Season 2 now.
Yeah.
And it's basically vignette stories inspired by anime and manga and other different types of animation styles that are Star Wars stories set in the world outside of like Skywalker and all that stuff.
Okay.
So this one...
This one was in the TV show.
Yeah.
Yes, this one was like Episode 1. It was inspired by like Seven Samurai and like Ronin Samurai stuff.
All Kurosawa stuff.
Yeah. Got it. All right.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah. So this story, if you know the story of the Ronin and the Droid, is the story of how they met. It's very like Mandalorian, Lone Wolf and Cub, that kind of thing.
Is that a Sakai cover?
Yeah. I got the Stan Sakai variant. I don't know. Did I announce this on the show that I'm having a son?
You did?
Well, I'm having a son.
On the Patreon.
On the Patreon. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there we go. So my fiance is pregnant, and we are having a son, and we have...
Sorry, ladies, and some fellas.
We have all but nailed down the name to Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, so I am now an extreme sucker for...
Stuff that's
Ronin-related. Yeah. So I had to get the Sakai cover, because this will probably be going up in my son's nursery.
Nice.
Rad, that's cool.
Yeah. Did I read anything else? Nope, that was it. I read Last Mermaid. Greg talked about that like
three weeks ago, right?
Yeah, like, it was great. A lot of fun.
A completely different story than I thought I was gonna get with Last Mermaid. Like the flip of it, her being like in a mech, trying to find fresh water to filter out the bad water that's in her system, was really, really cool. I love the world that they're creating there.
Yeah, a lot of fun. So all good stuff this week. I recommend all of it.
Dawn Runner is very good. It's not as complicated as some people in the club make it think. It is. But with that, I think we have successfully done a first issue episode. If you want more First Issue Club, we are on Patreon, patreon.com/First Issue Club. Andy and I just did another episode of 007 Club, where we talk about James Bond and the James Bond comic books that came out from Dynamite.
Yep.
We talked about the potentially new James Bond rumor for the movies and who they casted. So that'll be fun. So head over there, patreon.com/First Issue Club. We're also on YouTube. We're also on social medias. You'll hear it at the end of the episode. Mike, take it away.
Bye. First Issue Club is edited and produced by Mike DeStacy, Greg Lichtig, and Andy Vargas. Follow us on social media at First Issue Club, and check out our Patreon for videos, audio, and more at patreon.com/First Issue Club.